You may be seated, everyone. Shabbat shalom, everybody. So we have a treat today. We have Abby Tang, who is going to share a word with us, a drash with us. And every so often, we love to have members of our congregation come and share. And you guys have great things to say. I'm really looking forward to hearing your drash today, Abby. Abby, I remember when you first came some years ago, right? And I can visualize the day, and you brought joy here in the sanctuary and have always come with joy ever since. And so you guys know Abby is involved in leadership on a number of levels right now. She's running with Josh the youth and meeting every other Shabbat for studies, working on a team for the Yala, for the young adults, and also on the new young adult committee that we've just launched. And chairing Fiddler on the Roof. So she's just doing a wonderful job and jumped right in and is involved in all kinds of things. So Abby, why don't you come up and share with us? And Abby, if I could just say, I just want to let you guys know, is that okay? That Abby lost her grandfather this week. And she wanted to come and still be here and share this word with you guys today, but know that we're standing with you and with your family.
Shabbat shalom. Is that working? Hooray! Great. Good morning. It's really interesting to me because we've had this kind of speaking date on the calendar, I think maybe a little before Hava was born. And as I was reading it, I was thinking a lot about just themes, what I wanted to talk about. And then my grandfather passed this week, and it kind of brought a new level of understanding to this week's passage. And I got like more excited about speaking and just what we have to gain from this week's Parsha. So before we begin, I'm just going to pray for us. Avinu Malkeinu, Father, our King, I just thank you so much for your Shabbat. And I thank you for allowing us to come into rest with you. Lord, I pray that this is a time of true rest and true unity just with you and with our community, that we'd be able to just learn from your word. God, I pray that the words that I speak are not mine but yours, and that it's just your ideas, and you're using me as a vessel to convey this message. Lord, I just thank you for this rock community and this beautiful Shabbat morning. And I just pray these things in your name. Shem Yeshua, amen. Awesome. So I want to think a little bit more about this week's Parsha. And we didn't read it today in the English reading, but it was part of the beginning of this week's Parsha, Vayetzeh, is when Jacob meets his wife, Rachel. And it's a very interesting encounter because the two of them meet at a well. And so when I was thinking about this, the first image of a well that came to my mind is kind of that Disney princess kind of image where it's like a small little well, maybe it's probably like as big as this podium, and there's a little roof on the top, and like the princess will like daintily draw a bucket of water, and there's birds and singing and squirrels and bunnies, and then a prince comes by and he rescues her and like sweeps her away from the wicked witch and all the things, and it's very happy, it's very flowery and graceful. But I that's not the kind of well that we're talking about here when we're looking at wells in Scripture. I was doing more research on this, and these wells were massive. They were at least 7 feet in diameter, and then another 70 to 100 feet deep. So, like, deeper than this building, I think. I'm not really aware of measurements, but I'm assuming that it would be, I'm 5 feet tall, I think it would be more than four of me up to the ceiling. And so it's a very deep well, and so drawing water is not just a little bucket on a rope, but it's a long and tedious process. And so I want us to imagine that kind of well as we're looking at this passage today. What's really interesting also about this well is that we see in Genesis 29 that there was a large stone covering the well. And at first when I was thinking about this, I was imagining kind of like a big rock kind of stone, but it was a flat stone, and it was kind of like a lid on top of this well. And a group of people would have to come and remove the stone away from the well so people could draw water from this. And this was so people could have their fair portion of water. That way, not one person could take all the water for themselves, but them as a community could draw together. So it's this very interesting kind of communal idea of sharing water and sharing goods, just throughout history. So we're going to look at this well, and then we're going to move into our Besorah reading, which was another well, very similar to the one that we read about in our Parsha. It could be the same exact well. We're not really sure. But I think what we're going to find is that we find water at the wells in our Torah readings, but then we find a new kind of water in our Besorah, and this is living water from Yeshua. We're going to see how these things connect, so I'm really excited. So we're going to start with this week's Parsha again, going back to Genesis 29. There's a woman, and her name is Rachel. And she's drawing water, she's going to the well, she's bringing her flock of sheep with her, and she's doing what she does every week or whenever she goes to the well. She brings her flock with her, and she's getting ready. She chooses a very specific time to go to the well because she knows that large lid, that large stone, is going to be removed, and she'll be able to draw water from that. So she goes when she knows there will be other people there, except the people there are blocking the well from her, and she's not able to access the water. Now, this is important because they didn't have running water like we do. And I was thinking about this more, like these wells needed to be massive because they weren't just feeding people, but they were watering their crops, watering their flocks. Every animal, every plant, every person was reliant on a well in that community. And so this is really important because the wells, again, needed to be big enough so that they could draw water and also that so they could have a stable water source. It needed to have not just enough water for one day, for one family, one community, but for a long, sustained period of time. And so she goes to this well knowing that other people will be there to help her draw water. And she reaches there, and instead she's met with this strange man. She's never seen him before from a far-off town. But this man, for some reason, is excited when he meets her. And he runs over and he introduces himself as Jacob. He says that he is a cousin of hers and he'd like to see her. She's really excited about this. There's this young man, maybe eligible, who knows. And she goes home and she tells her father the news. And she's really excited about this. She says, guess what, I've been at the well. And then her father says, okay, you're going to marry him. And so Rachel meets her husband, Jacob, at the well. Now, what's also really important is that it wasn't just marriage as in like, oh, love, yay. I mean, that's important and everything, but what marriage meant for a woman at this time was also security. Financially and physically, it meant she had a roof over her head. It meant she had some responsibility in a society. It meant she could become a mother and actually have a role, different than it was if she wasn't married. So she's able to find rest and security in the promise of her marriage. And she finds this at the well. But as I was reading this passage, I was a little confused because I thought I was remembering some details that weren't in this passage. I thought there were camels in the story instead of sheep, and I didn't remember her meeting the actual man at the well. I thought she had meant a servant of the man at the well. So I'm trying to remember like where this had come from, and then it dawned on me that would be Rebecca and Isaac, who also met at a well, like father, like son. So Rebecca goes to a well a few chapters before, in Genesis 24, and she goes to a well, and she is bringing her flock. And when she's there, she's met with an unfamiliar man whom she hasn't seen before from a distant town. And this man asks her if she can draw water for him. And she's nice. She's a kind woman. And so she does. But she also sees that this man has flocks of camels, which need a lot of water. And so she says, yeah, of course I'll draw water for you. Well, while I'm at it, let me also draw water for your camels. And we know that wells were deep. We know that they were big. And we also know that camels drink a lot of water. So she's not just saying, I'll water your camels and do a nice deed for you. She's subjecting herself to hours of labor, going down to this 100-foot deep well, drawing water for him and drawing water for camels. So this woman is at the well, and she draws water. She meets this man, and she's excited about this. And the man is excited by meeting her. And so he offers her gold jewelry. He asks if she has a place to stay for the night. And she says, yes, of course, come home with me. And so she comes home and introduces him to her father. And there's a celebration, and she shares the good news. And her father says, okay, this man is a servant of a guy named Abraham. Abraham has a son named Isaac. You are going to marry Isaac. So now this is our second encounter of a woman finding rest and security in marriage at a well. It's a very interesting pattern that we're seeing here. But then I have to say there was one more passage I thought I was remembering about a woman at a well. Except I felt like it was later, and I know for a fact that it wasn't having anything to do with Abraham or his descendants. But this man, I think he drove away some sheep, other shepherds from the well. And then I remember that would be Moses and Zipporah in Exodus 2. So Zipporah is another woman. She's a Midianite at a well. And she's at a well with her sisters. She has seven sisters. And they're also taking their family's flock to go to the giant well to gather water for them. And while she's there, she meets an unfamiliar man from a strange town whom she hasn't seen before. And while she's at the well, there's some other men who are driving her flock away, and she's unable to access the well, very similar to Rachel. But this man, this strange, unfamiliar, again, maybe eligible man, we don't know, came to the well and drove away all the other shepherds and allowed Zipporah and her sisters to gather water from the well. So here we have a third time of this woman meeting a man at the well. She then goes home and tells her father, who's excited by this, and says, all right, Zipporah, I want you to marry this man. So we have instance number three. But there was also one more story, and I couldn't remember what it was. But there's one more instance of a woman at a well in the Torah. And does anybody remember what that was? I couldn't either. The Samaritan woman, we'll get to that in a minute. But in the Torah, we have one more instance, and this is when Hagar is at a well. You see, Hagar was a handmaiden in Abraham's house, and she was a servant of Sarah. And when Sarah wasn't able to bear children, she gave Hagar to Abraham, her husband. Abraham and Hagar had a son. They named him Ishmael. And soon Sarah grew jealous. She said, why is Ishmael here? Because I thought my son was going to be the one to be a great nation. Jealous, again, she goes to Abraham and says, Abraham, I want you to send her out. And so he sends Hagar out with his son Ishmael. And he gives them a skin of water and some bread. And then Hagar and her son are wandering in the wilderness for a prolonged period of time, not that long, because soon they run out of water. And what's fascinating here is that Hagar knows that they're going to die. They have limited resources. They have not much to sustain themselves with. And she's a mother of a very young child. She doesn't want to see her son die. And so what she does, knowing that something's going to happen to them, she puts her son under a bush and she says, if he's going to die, I don't want to bear witness. I don't want to see this. You wouldn't want to see it. And so she leaves him there and goes a ways away and sits down under a tree and she starts weeping because she knows that she's going to die. She knows her son is going to die. And everything feels hopeless. They're hot. They're tired. They're thirsty. They've run out of everything to survive on. And so her son is over there, and she's over here, and she's weeping, and she hears a voice. She hears the angel of the Lord, and he's saying, look up. Look, there's a well in front of you. I'm going to sustain you, and your son, he will not die. I promise. Go over to him and rescue him, and there will be water for both of you. And so Hagar looks up after having this divine intervention with an unfamiliar voice, probably. She looks up and she sees a well, and she draws water for herself and Ishmael, having found security and rest at this divine well. So this story is a little different from the other ones because Hagar is offered sustenance, but through God himself, not another human. That's not to say the other experiences weren't valid or weren't secure or restful, but this is God himself meeting Hagar, which it's beautiful. It's a story of survival and motherhood rather than just mere rejoicing, which those stories are also great. But what does this mean? We see these women. We see Rachel, Rebecca, Zipporah, and Hagar, and they're met divinely at wells. Their lives are fundamentally changed after an encounter with an unfamiliar man. So to recap, let's look at this pattern one more time. A woman goes to a well, and water is drawn. She's interrupted by someone who's on a mission from God, whether or not they know they're on a mission from God. This person is unfamiliar. The woman has never seen him before. Then a bond is created between this man and this woman at the well after water is drawn. And then the woman returns home and she shares about this encounter. So with this story in mind, let's look at one final instance of a woman meeting an unfamiliar man at the Bible. We see this in our Besorah passage today, but I want to take another look at it because I think we're going to find that this is a new kind of culmination of encounters with God. So we're going to look at John 4, our Besorah reading. And this is fascinating because it's the same well, or it belonged to Jacob at least, where Jacob and Rachel met. Except now there's a new man and a new woman there. And it's a different kind of story. If I can flip and find it. There we go, right where I put my bookmark. So there's a Samaritan woman at a well. And she's walking up to this well. And she's tired. And she goes at a time when not a lot of people are at the well. And she goes up ready to be alone. We're not really sure why, but she's not like Rachel in the fact where Rachel goes at a time when other people are going to be there. She goes at a time when she won't be seen. But instead, someone is there. And it's a little unsettling because this person is Jewish, and she's a Samaritan. And there wasn't a good history there, which we'll get in a minute. There's a Jewish man there, and he's weary. He's tired, maybe really sweaty, and he's just sitting at the well. And so I imagine her kind of bracing herself and like, okay, I don't want to see anyone today, but here we go. And she walks over to the well, ready to draw water for herself. And instead, this man talks to her, which was a surprise because it says right here that Jewish people don't deal with Samaritans. But instead, this man talks to her, and we actually have his words right here. He says, give me a drink. And so she's startled. She says, what do you want with me? You're a Jewish man. I'm a Samaritan woman. We shouldn't be talking. We shouldn't be interacting, much less you asking me to do something for you. But he responds, and he says, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who is saying to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. I know I was confused when I read this passage, and I grew up believing in Yeshua and hearing this passage. So I can't imagine the confusion that this woman must have had, because she's looking at him, and she's an intelligent woman. We know this from her response, because she says, "You don't have a bucket, and the well is deep. How on earth are you going to draw water?" This man has nothing to do, has nothing to draw water with. And he's saying, "I'm going to give you water." This is probably confusing, much less he's a Jewish man talking to a Samaritan woman. I can't emphasize this enough. And she says, "You're no greater than our father Jacob, are you? He gave us this well. He drank out of it himself with his sons and his cattle." Again, like, what are you doing here? Why are you talking to me? And this man responds to her and he says, "Everyone who drinks from this water will get thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him shall never be thirsty. The water that I give him will become a fountain of water within him, springing up to eternal life." Wouldn't you get excited if you heard the words eternal life? You never have to go to the well again. You never have to do hours of laborious work digging down deep into the well, drawing it out for your crops, for your family, for your cattle. I mean, it would be restful if you never had to go to the well again. And that's what this man understands. And then to top it off, you have eternal life. So this woman is very excited by this. She says, "Sir, give me this water so I won't get thirsty or have to come all the way to draw water. I don't want to have to do this anymore. Please, give me rest. Give me this living water." And so this man says, "Go call your husband and then come back here." But this woman, I'm imagining her maybe looking down. Maybe she's a little sad, maybe a little ashamed, and she says, "I don't have a husband." And somehow, this unfamiliar, this foreign Jewish man knows that she doesn't have a husband. He says, "You're right. You have no husband. You've had five husbands, and the man you have now isn't your husband. This, you've spoken truthfully." And so this woman, again, she's an intelligent woman, and she's ready to engage in a theological conversation with this man. And she says, "Sir, I see that you're a prophet." That's the only reasonable conclusion, right? If somebody who's unfamiliar to you just gives you your whole life story. She says, "Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you all say the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." And so now here we have some of the differences between Jews and Samaritans. It was not an easy relationship, but Yeshua, this man at the well, dismantles these misconceptions. You see, the Jews didn't deal with Samaritans because the Samaritans had assimilated into Assyrian culture. And so they followed the Torah, they interpreted the Torah in different ways, but in doing so, they also rejected the rest of the Tanakh. So the prophets, the temple, Mount Zion, all of it was null and void for the Samaritans. And Jews didn't like this because we have the prophets, we have the Tanakh, we have poetry, and we have this beautiful temple. And so there's this dissent because they're worshiping different versions of God. And so Yeshua sees this, and he wants to dismantle this misconception that she has of him. Because Samaritans were rejected by the authority of Jews. Not only were they rejected, but they were usually ostracized. It's like Jews didn't even talk to them. And so for this Jewish man to be talking to a Samaritan woman who has a fundamentally different notion of who their God is groundbreaking. And he, instead of condemning her, he redirects her. He says, "An hour is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You worship what you know. You worship what you do not know. We, the Jews, worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. But an hour is coming, it's here now, when true worshipers will follow the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people as his worshipers. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." And so he's saying, you don't have the correct way of seeing things, and I'm here to redirect that in a very loving way. And it's so interesting, and this is standing out to me now, how he says that we, the true worshipers, will worship the Father in spirit and truth. After, he just basically praises her for saying that you have said it true. You're right, you have no husband. He's praising her for her truthfulness before. And now he wants to redirect that out of the perception that she has of God and worship at the temple into something that will be also true. So he wants her to know her. He wants her to know him for who he truly is. And this woman comes to him and she says, "I know that the Messiah is coming, and when he comes, he will explain everything to us." And I just want to imagine this woman's face. She's tired, she's also weary, and she's drawing water. And Yeshua says, "I, the one speaking to you, I am the Messiah." I mean, how much rest would that bring you? And isn't it amazing? Because he just said, "I will give you living water. I will make it so you don't have to work for water again." And he just says, "I'm him. I'm the one. This is how I'm going to do it." And it's beautiful. So we see here, for a final time, a woman at a well who goes and is met with an unfamiliar man, and she draws water, and then a bond is created between this man and woman. This woman then goes out and shares with the rest of her community about the good news that she's found. But I want to take another look at this woman's backstory, because there's a lot of interpretations of who she is. A very common interpretation is that this woman is a prostitute. She has had 5 husbands before, bouncing from man to man, and now she's scandalously living with a man whom she's not married to. We don't know what she's doing, but she's been ostracized by her community. Maybe she's alone at the well and goes to a time because she's tired of being made fun of. She's tired of people rejecting her, she's tired of the shame, and so she doesn't want to be seen anymore. As I was reading, though, I found across this one biblical scholar, his name is Eli Eisenberg, and he argues that, no, this woman is not a prostitute, but a widow. Rather than bouncing from husband to husband, which wouldn't really make sense because women didn't have the power to initiate divorce in this time. A man would have had to divorce her. And then not only that, a man would have had to divorce her, but another man would have had to come and say, I want to marry you, despite your adultery, despite your past. And this would have had to happen multiple times until she lives with another man who also has taken her on and said, I want to live with you, I want to marry you, despite your history. And that just didn't seem realistic. So instead, Eisenberg says that this woman was a widow. She found a husband, and she was married. Maybe they had a really happy marriage, but lifespans were short, and he passed away. And so she found another man, and again, marriage meant security. It meant financial and physical safety for a woman at this time. And so she goes and meets another man, and she marries him. But then he also passes away, or maybe for some reason he divorces her, but she finds another husband who wants to marry her. And the cycle repeats over and over again until she's left with nowhere else to go to. And now she's living with another man, maybe a cousin, a family member, who's taken her in, not because he wants to commit infidelity with her, but because she has nowhere else to go. She's living with this man out of necessity. She's living with him out of protection. And so when Yeshua says it's true, you say you have no husband, you've had 5 husbands, and the man you have now isn't your husband, he's not saying, I know your immorality, I know you've committed adultery, and I'm here to forgive you. He's saying, I know your pain, I'm here, and I want to empathize with you. I want to enter into your grief with you, and I want to stand next to you because I want to recognize the pain you're feeling. Because in through me giving you living water, I'm also going to give you rest and security that you haven't been able to find in your previous marriages. He's saying, I know you have something life-sustaining at the well, but I'm even more life-sustaining because I'm life itself. You see, the human body can't go more than 3 days without water, and so we needed to go to the well repeatedly to keep drawing. But once we drink from the well of Yeshua, we have life. We have eternal satisfaction. So instead of a woman who's been condemned by her community and ostracized for her infidelity, we see here a woman who is grieving. We see a woman who's been offered comfort and she's not sure how to proceed. And in doing so, she's engaging with a deep theological conversation with Yeshua, who's breaking her very concepts of life, marriage, and comfort by saying, no, I am more. I know you have the Samaritan ways of doing things, but I am more. I'm not only living water, but I am the law, and I'm going to give you comfort. So what does this mean, then, that we have living water too? Because we know we can drink from the well. We see Yeshua telling here that we see him saying that he will give us living water. And I think, I was saying before, this encounter is a culmination of the previous encounters we've seen in our Torah readings. The woman is actually encountering an incarnation of God, who is the ultimate one to bond with. So what does this mean, that she's encountering an incarnation of God? She's not just meeting a man on a mission from God. She's not hearing a voice of God. She's meeting God himself in the human flesh. And I think this is fascinating because God is with us in human flesh, meaning he is the ultimate, he's God, he's all powerful, but he's weary. And he has living water, but he's thirsty. And he says that he'll give us rest, but he's tired. And so there's these, not contradictions, but there's these confusions that come up with this man. And so I think here what we see is that Yeshua experiences humanity so deeply that he experienced the basic need for water. At our fundamental forms, just physically, we cannot exist without water. And by Yeshua saying that I am the living water, we now know that we cannot exist without Yeshua. So we see here not only a woman meeting a man at the well and being able to marry him and offered comfort and security, we see a restoration at the well, because water brings life and water brings restoration. Yeshua is like water in the fact that he is life-sustaining, but once we know him, we know him. The water has been drawn. At the well, we make ourselves weary to reach sustenance, but with Yeshua, we bring our weary selves to receive life. And it's beautiful what Yeshua does here, because he draws near to the brokenhearted. And I read that in the psalm, and I think it's so cool because the Samaritans rejected the psalms. So this woman wouldn't have had these words, but even better, she now gets to experience these words firsthand by Yeshua saying, I'm living water, I'm here to comfort you. And he then reveals himself as the ultimate comforter. I think what's also important here is the importance of Yeshua's vulnerability, because he's standing at the well, like after a long day of traveling. His disciples are gone, they're getting food, so he's probably also hungry. So again, he's living water, but he's asking for a drink from the well. He has the ability to offer rest even though he is physically tired, because his well never runs dry. Because we receive life from him, he has so much life that we get to receive from him, but he also gets to keep sustaining himself. Because while he is fully human, he is fully God and fully all-powerful, fully omniscient. One of the things that I love about this passage is that of all the husbands that we've met previously at the well, Yeshua is the ultimate husband. See, Isaac and Rebekah loved each other, yes, but Rebekah later played a part in deliberately deceiving Isaac through their son. And while Jacob worked 14 years for Rachel, he had 13 children with four wives. Yeshua does not do that. He's not going to deceive us. He's not going to turn around and be with somebody else instead of us. He's the ultimate husband. He's our ultimate love. He's the ultimate thing that our heart truly desires, that our soul needs in order to live. In this context, women don't just have financial security. They just don't have physical stability, but their souls are filled. The very nature within us is going to be sustained because we have the love and the light of Yeshua coursing through us as living water. So Yeshua is able to bring his humanity to us without bringing brokenness. And this is a crazy kind of thing, because we think of Yeshua and he lived a perfect life. What does that mean? It meant that he was able to live in this world without sinning, without ever straying from God, because he was God. But at the same time, we know that he was hungry. We know that he was thirsty. We know that he was tempted and experiencing all the physical things that we as human beings do. But he doesn't give in to that because he's God. And so he's able to come alongside us as the perfect human. Like the epitome of what we're called to be as people, as what God designed us to be in the garden. So he perfectly defines what it is to live in the flesh, but he will not fall subject to what humans fall to. And this is what I love so much about this woman potentially being a widow, because he will not fall subject to what humans fall subject to, and we fall subject to death. Because we know he didn't die. While he died, he was raised back after 3 days. And so we know that he's not just living water for when we're here, but living water for when we're not here, if that makes sense. And I'm not saying that Yeshua only grants this rest at wells, because if women found water at wells, something life-sustaining, how much more will they find in him? You see, God meets us everywhere, not just when we're drawing water from a well. We see this in all throughout the scriptures. He meets us on mountains, in bushes, maybe at rivers instead of wells. He meets us at the sea. He meets us in the desert. He meets us in our sleep, in our homes. Wherever we are, he's able to come to us and meet with us. But the thing that he offers remains the same. If he meets us in our home, he still presents us with living water. If he meets us even at an ocean, even at a Red Sea and about to cross, he still provides living water. If we meet him at a well, we're supposed to be drawing water, he's able to surpass the water that we're going to find in offering us the ultimate kind of living water. And so I kind of want to end on this by talking about our Haftorah reading, which is from Hosea. And Hosea is a book about another woman, but this woman is a prostitute, maybe unlike the Samaritan woman. But God uses Hosea, who's a prophet at the time, and he speaks through him saying, I want you to marry a prostitute, and she's going to be cheating on you, she's going to commit adultery, but I want you to remain faithful to her, and I want you to love her regardless of what she does. And God uses Hosea and his wife Gomer as an example of his faithfulness to Israel, because he knows that Israel is going to go off and bow down to other gods. He knows that Israel is going to disregard his Torah and do everything that they're not supposed to do, but God knows that he will remain faithful to Israel despite all of this. So Hosea is an example of God's faithfulness with his wife. And in the end, his wife Gomer is redeemed, and she returns to Hosea as her husband. So our Haftarah reading was later on in the book Hosea of chapter 12 through 14, but earlier in chapter 2 in Hosea, God talks about when we are redeemed, when Israel will be redeemed as a nation. But he says, in that day, you will call me my husband. You will no longer call me my master. He says, I am your husband. I am the ultimate love of your life. I am the one that is going to fill your soul with everything you could possibly need. He says, I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you in righteousness and justice, in love and compassion. I will betroth you in faithfulness, and you will know the Lord. And isn't that exactly what Yeshua does with the Samaritan woman? He says, I am yours. I am here for you. And this woman also, the Samaritans read from the Torah, so she would have been familiar with the stories of Rachel and Jacob, Isaac and Rebecca, Moses and Zipporah meeting their husbands at the wells. And now she gets to experience for herself what it is to meet her genuine love, the true love, the one that whom her soul searches for at the well. We know that our marriage is to Yeshua. And we see here in his offer for living water that he's binding himself back to us. It's not just us reaching out and saying, okay, hey, I need someone. Can someone come give me attention? Can someone come love me? He says, I'm already searching for you. I'm already here for you. I was waiting for you to come to me, and I'm ready to love you back. I'm ready to not even love you back. I'm ready to love you because that's what I'm supposed to do. That's my very existence as God. That's my entire job is to love you, my children, my bride. So we see that Yeshua is our well. He's our living water. He was the water at the well with Jacob and Rachel. He was the water at the well with Isaac and Rebecca. And he was the water at the well with Moses and Zipporah. And he was the water with Hagar. So he is a water that will not go away. And what I want to remember is that his well will not run dry. So yeah, Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Abby. That was terrific.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you, Abby, for sharing those important words with us. And let's just leave with those words. May his well never run dry. And of course, it won't. And may it stay very deep, even here at Rook Israel. Let's close with the Eleinu on page 93. If I can invite you to rise.